Earlier this week, ProPublica reporter Abram Lustgarten continued his series on underground injection wells that contain waste from fracking, mining, and other sources. He found that the EPA has issued exemptions that allow energy and mining companies to pollute aquifers in more than 1,500 places across the country, releasing toxic material in underground reservoirs that help supply more than half of America's drinking water. He joined us on the podcast to explain why this is happening and how it can affect you. Welcome to the podcast, Abram.
Thank you for having me.
Abram, you wrote a story this week called Poisoning the Well, How the Feds Let Industry Pollute the Nation's Underground Water Supply. Can you tell us a little bit about the investigation?
Yeah, sure. For the last year, we've been examining how waste is injected underground for disposal. There's a whole federal regulatory program that oversees this, and the sole focus of that entire EPA program is to protect underground sources of drinking water. It's been a contentious issue, and for more than a year in my interactions with the Environmental Protection Agency, they've insisted that their regulations and their processes are effective in keeping drinking water sources safe. And what we essentially found is that a little-known part of that very regulatory program actually allows the aquifers to be polluted. We tried to count how many. It's hard to get a precise handle on that, but we counted at least 1,500 cases in which the EPA has issued permits and then overseen the injection of toxic contaminants directly into drinking water aquifers. So it's really kind of an extraordinary contradiction with the nature of the program. They say this is water that's not supposed to be used or is unlikely to be used in the future, so the impact is small, but the core issue is that the value of water is changing, and what we've thought in the past won't be valuable is increasingly valuable and is almost certain to be, you know, of use to people in the future.
Well, knowing that, how much do I have to worry about my drinking water?
Short term, I don't think that there's any huge cause for concern. What we're really looking at here is a long-range national water quality question. It's, will we preserve the opportunity for people to have good water 10 years from now, 30 years from now, 100 years from now, as it becomes increasingly scarce and there's more and more need, especially in the driest parts of the country, to start going to deep underground water reservoirs for sources of drinking water.
Part of the problem is people don't know how this will impact the water in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is a lack of data and a lack of understanding of water quality in general around the country, in your drinking water and mine, in the reservoirs that are currently being used. That's a little bit separate from what we're looking at here, but there are good questions to ask about the quality of that water. This is really about what kind of regulatory setup do we have? What kind of government protections do we have to take care of these sort of basic resources and basic amenities?
Why would the EPA allow these exemptions to take place?
It started off as a pragmatic gesture. You go back to the early 1980s, and the Safe Drinking Water Act, like many other environmental laws, was relatively new. Implementing those laws, you know, was a matter of getting a lot of different parties to the table to agree. And in this case, the oil and gas industry and other resource industries had to at least not fight too hard, if not agree on being regulated. So the EPA implemented what they called aquifer exemptions as a kind of compromise, that it won the oil and gas industry's approval, and it basically said, well, if there's certain circumstances that come up once in a while, and you can show us that a water source that's threatened really isn't going to be used for drinking water, then we'll have this loophole that would allow an exemption, and maybe that makes us all feel a little bit more comfortable with the regulations going forward. It wasn't necessarily intended to be used as frequently as it is and as universally as it is.
You wrote about how this affects Texas. Can you explain what's happening there, how some of these cities are dependent on these aquifers because of the drought?
Yeah, Texas, perhaps more than any other state in the U.S. right now, is suffering from a long-term drought. They're increasingly desperate for water, and they're on the forefront of a national trend of recognizing that water has real economic value. That is, that communities and people are willing to pay a lot more for it than they had in the past. So what that means is that cities like El Paso, or San Antonio that are running out of water. Their reservoirs are running dry. Their river supplies are inadequate. So those cities are spending $100 million, $200 million in some cases to take briny or slightly salty water, you know, out of the earth and treat it and use it for municipal drinking water. On the other hand, you know, the oil and gas industry is pervasive throughout Texas, and they've long operated with the assumption that that salty water, those briny reservoirs, are of no use to anybody, because who would want to drink salty water, and if you could treat it, who would want to spend the money to treat it when water was quote-unquote free, and it was just kind of coming out of the taps, no problem. Suddenly, the water that regulators, the oil and gas industry, long assumed had no value and nobody would want it, suddenly is wanted and is valuable and is worthwhile to drink, and we're running out of alternatives. So increasingly, there's not only a desire to use it, but a desperate need to preserve it for drinking and for agriculture and every other use.
There's also a real need to dispose of this waste. Like in the example you gave of uranium mining, is putting it underground one of the best ways to do it?
You're right. There is a huge need to dispose of this waste, and it's got to go somewhere. And there is that sort of pragmatic conversation that comes up. There's problems with all sorts of underground waste disposal, but in other articles, we've looked at the fact that there's hundreds of thousands of disposal wells, and there's several hundred of them that handle the worst kind of toxic waste, hazardous waste. And the vast majority of those wells, by regulation, go nowhere near drinking water aquifers. They comply with the Safe Drinking Water Act. They find relatively safer portions of underground systems, rock bodies, that they can dispose of that waste. And while there are risks to doing that, there's no one who would disagree with the idea that that is better than injecting it straight into a drinking water aquifer. So these 1,500 cases or more that we're looking at that the EPA has permitted aquifer injections, they're really the worst of the worst, and it appears to be easy to find alternatives just by the numbers, by the fact that they found alternatives in 100,000 other cases. There's also other opportunities to minimize the amount of risk. Increasingly, companies are looking at recycling this wastewater so that there's a higher concentration but a lower volume of waste that needs to be injected underground and disposed of, and also just trying to lessen the amount of waste that's produced in the first place.
Now, one of the things that was most surprising to me was that the EPA doesn't even appear to be keeping track of where they're allowing these exemptions to happen. That seems really strange to me.
They're not, and this is extraordinary. I mean, this was one of the first things that came up in my reporting, the obvious question of, can you give me a list of these exemptions? Where are they? And you know, the EPA hemmed and hawed for 6 months in negotiating how they would answer my Freedom of Information Act request, and then finally gave me a call and said, look, you know, we're a little bit embarrassed to say this, but we don't really have an answer to your question. We haven't kept track of this. Sometimes it's been written on paper files, and those paper files have been lost, or those paper files have been archived off in a warehouse in Denver somewhere, and we don't have access to them. And nobody's ever created a database, and nobody's ever really looked at this on a systemic or on a regional scale.
Is there a unit that is responsible for these type of exemptions?
Well, you have the Water Protection Division of the EPA. They enforce the Underground Injection Control Program under the Safe Drinking Water Act. It's a very important unit, relatively small and understaffed, looking at about 200 or so employees across the United States.
You also kind of noted that there's an internal conflict of interest that's going on, and that they had even developed a unit that was going to try and reexamine these exemptions.
Well, yeah, the EPA is in a tough position right now when it comes to environmental regulations in general. Much of it has to do with politics. If they regulate too much or with new regulations, then they face an assault from Congress that wants to cut off their funding. And if they don't do enough, then they face criticism from Congress for being ineffectual and perhaps losing their funding. So they're kind of in a lose-lose situation. And you combine that with this political atmosphere in which nobody, whether the Obama administration or a challenging administration, you know, wants to buck the oil and gas industry. Everybody's pro-energy. Everybody wants increased energy independence in the United States. So there's a real trend away from regulation. And what you have within the EPA is a group that recognizes that these aquifer exemptions are a concern and that underground injection in general is a concern, and is trying to address those concerns in a subtle way without restarting a regulatory process without bringing a lot of response from people who would object to new regulations, basically without giving fuel to their critics. So they're kind of trying to have their cake and eat it too. They're trying to figure out a solution. They recognize the problem. They wouldn't necessarily disagree with what we wrote this week, but they can't quite go through a process of increasing or writing new regulations because it's not politically acceptable.
All right. Abram, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Abram Lustgarten. You can read the full story at propublica.org/injectionwells. And now for our official Say the Darndest Things Tumblr quote of the week. When do you stop the man hug? It's hard. Who said it? New Jersey Governor Chris Christie recounting hugging Bruce Springsteen. All right, that's it for this week's show. Thank you to Tim Kramer for producing and to you for listening. For ProPublica, I'm Mike Webb. We'll catch you next time.